and it is 5:30 here at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And my name's the B-Man. I'll be here with you for the next half hour with my program Rockin' the Boat. Every weekday, Monday through Friday, 5:30 to 6 right here at 96.3 FM. And today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll be discussing more on media reform and the movement to overturn the recent FCC decision to allow corporations to control ever greater numbers of media outlets in this country. My guest today, Bob McChesney, author of 8 books, including Rich Media, Poor Democracy. Bob McChesney is a professor of communications at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And today we'll discuss the media reform movement. Stand by, stay tuned, Rockin' the Boat coming up next. In a 3-2 vote along party lines, the Republican-controlled Federal Communications Commission voted June 2nd of this year to overturn decades-old rules designed to limit the number of media outlets one company can own in a given market. Now, Congress is gearing up to amend the FCC revision of its rules. Senate Bill 1046, introduced in the Commerce Committee by Senators Fritz Hollings, Democrat from South Carolina, and Ted Stevens, a Republican from Alaska, seeks to restore the limits on station ownership and may also bring back the rule against cross-ownership. The committee will vote on the bill Thursday morning, and if they approve it for a floor vote as expected, the entire Senate will vote on the issue and almost certainly pass it by a wide margin, moving it along to the House of Representatives. Today on Rockin' the Boat, we'll discuss this issue with Robert McChesney, professor of communications at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, and the author of 8 books, including Rich Media, Poor Democracy, and with John Nichols, the recent book, Our Media, Not Theirs. Bob McChesney has also written some 120 journal articles and book chapters and another 140 newspaper pieces, magazine articles, and book reviews. His work has been translated into 10 languages. Bob McChesney co-edits the History of Communications series for the University of Illinois Press, serves on the editorial boards of several journals, and is a research advisor to numerous academic and civic organizations. Prior to entering graduate school in 1983, Bob McChesney was a sports stringer for United Press International, published a weekly newspaper, and in 1979 was the founding publisher of The Rocket, a Seattle-based rock magazine. Earlier this year, he founded Free Press, a national nonprofit media reform organization working to democratize and ignite media policy debates. Earlier in the day, I spoke with Robert McChesney from his home in Urbana, Illinois. He begins now with an assessment of the June 2nd FCC decision.
Well, the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, is responsible for issuing monopoly licenses to companies to have monopoly rights to airwaves. The FCC will then protect their monopoly rights. It's an extremely lucrative thing. It's impossible not to make money if you're given one of these monopoly licenses for free by the government. And traditionally, the deal has been that the Federal Communications Commission, representing the Congress, which represents the people of the country who own the spectrum, will put conditions on these monopoly licenses since they are so lucrative and so powerful. And the main condition is historically put on these monopoly licensees to commercial stations has been limits on what other media they could own, because the fear was if you let a company have a number of monopoly licenses to TV or radio stations, they'd take their super profits and then buy up all the other media in the community, and that would give them an inordinate influence over the journalism, the culture, and the town. So there have been strict or relatively strict ownership limits historically put on broadcast license receivers on the number of radio and TV stations they can own totally and what other media they can own in terms of newspapers and especially newspapers and cable systems. Well, on June 2nd, the FCC reviewed several of these crucial rules and relaxed them or limited them in one case. And the rules, the crucial ones that were relaxed were raised the percentage of the country that a single company could own TV stations in from 35 to 45%. And it also waived the cross-ownership prohibition. So companies that once had not been permitted to own TV and radio stations along with newspapers in the same community can now do so. It also allowed companies to own more than one television station in a single town. In most American cities now, a company will be able to buy two stations, and in the largest cities, three stations. In combination, these rules relaxation will lead to a wave of media deals, much more concentrated markets, much less competition. And in community after community across the country, we'll see a situation where one company will own the daily newspaper, two television stations, and six, seven, or eight radio stations. There will be almost company towns for media in many parts of the country.
In a recent editorial published on Alternet, Jim Hightower writes, quote, "The FCC action was regulatory rape, stripping the belt off and ripping apart the rules that protect our public airwaves from monopoly control." Do you think that this analysis is a bit harsh, or is this a pretty accurate assessment of what happened?
I think it's mild. Not harsh. I mean, I think Jim is being understated in his criticism. And this is really quite an extraordinary example of political corruption. It's mind-boggling. On one side, you know, Michael Powell, the FCC, headed by Michael Powell, has traditionally been a very corrupt institution. I mean, American people don't know what's going on. It routinely basically doles out these monopoly licenses to big companies with powerful lobbies. The people at the FCC, after they finish their careers, they invariably go on to work as lobbyists and in industry and get big salaries from the very people they once had been theoretically regulating. And in general, this stuff has gone on without anyone knowing anything about it. You know, it's been in private, doesn't get any press coverage. And, you know, now what happened was finally, thanks to the organizing of a lot of people and groups, including the group I helped start, Free Press, there's a lot of public attention that's gone to this in the last year. And Michael Powell, the head of the Federal Communications Commission, was urged on by the two minority members of the commission, the Democrats, Copps and Adelstein, to hold public hearings around the country given the importance of these matters. And he refused to do so. And instead what Powell said was, look, I'm way too busy to travel around the country and meet with people. Instead what they can do is they can send me letters and emails and file dockets on what they think of relaxing the media ownership rules. Well, 750,000 Americans took Michael Powell up at his recommendation, filed letters, emails, or dockets concerning the proposed relaxation of media ownership rules. And by the account of FCC member Michael Copps, 99.9% of those people opposed relaxing media ownership rules. Many of them favored tightening them radically. Yet Michael Powell ignored the public opinion he solicited entirely, said these people don't know what they're talking about. And instead, he and the other two Republicans voted to relax media ownership rules. I mean, on one side of the table, you had virtually the entire American population across the political spectrum, including the National Rifle Association and the Christian Right, not to mention Consumers Union, Common Cause, and the National Organization for Women and Rainbow Push, all united. On the other side of the table, all you had were a handful of very powerful lobbyists, very rich, huge companies that have bankrolled a lot of politicians and regulators. The three Republicans, the majority, went with the rich guys, went with the corporate lobbyists, completely ignoring public opinion. As I said, Jim Hightower is being mild. Moreover, what was Michael Powell doing this spring when he claimed he was too busy to go to the 14 public hearings that were held around the country for people to give their input on media ownership, that the two Democrats on the FCC attended almost all of them? What was he doing? Well, we now know what he was doing. He was meeting on an almost daily basis and behind the closed door secret meetings of corporate executives and lobbyists. I mean, that's what he was, along with the top FCC officials, consulting with Wall Street analysts who represent these companies on how to devise the new rules. Again, the corruption here is so thick, it's so extraordinary that it boggles the mind. And it's one of the reasons why today and tomorrow, this week and next week in Congress, there's a strong move to overturn the FCC's rulings, because the American people have let members of Congress know this is totally unacceptable. And I would urge listeners to Free Radio Santa Cruz to participate. Go to the website, I'm about to give you the address, where we collect the movement, the signatures, where you can go and file your protest to your two senators, Boxer and Feinstein, and to the relevant members of the House from California. The web address is www.mediareform.net. and get active in this issue. This is an issue which is we can really win this thing because the politicians, if they hear from enough people, will not let the FCC ruling stand. And it's not just about radios and television and newspaper ownership rules in the short term. It's about really invigorating a long-term movement to set up a democratic media system. So stations like this one, Free Radio Santa Cruz, instead of being hiding out in the margins of the federales chasing after them, will be able to be respected members of the community with a justified place on the spectrum and lots of companies, so they aren't isolated. There's a rich, diverse media culture.
I'm speaking today with Bob McChesney. He is a professor of communications at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and a well-published media critic. Bob, the forces promoting deregulation argue that with the advent of cable and 24-hour news channels...
Hey, Vinny, can I stop you?
Sure.
There's no such... This deregulation term is simply sort of ideological bullshit propaganda, mm-hmm. if you pardon my French.
That's fine.
And, you know, I understand why the industry uses that term, but those of us who don't have $1 billion riding on the companies that own our media system should never use the term deregulation. The choice, they use that term because they want us to think that the option is between having regulation, like government control, or deregulation, free markets, libertarian, entrepreneurs, competition. That's not the choice here at all. The choice isn't between deregulation and markets, regulation and deregulation. They say that radio is deregulated since 1996 when the ownership cap was lifted in radio. But I'm telling you, I don't have to tell you of anyone, that if you were to go into one of the commercial frequencies in the Santa Cruz area and start broadcasting, and say, hey, it's deregulated, I'm going to broadcast in this frequency now, you'd end up doing 20 years of hard labor in a prison. It's heavily regulated. What the corporations mean when they talk about deregulation isn't genuine deregulation when anyone can have a crack at these frequencies. They're still government-enforced monopolies. What they mean by deregulation is simply regulation strictly to serve corporate interests with no pretense of serving the public. And that's what the fight's over. It's whether you have regulation that serves some publicly determined values or regulation strictly made in a corrupt form to serve private corporate interests. That's the real fight here. So the term deregulation is meaningless.
So what term should be used?
Re-regulation purely to serve private corporate interest. That's the accurate, honest use of the language.
Well, the forces arguing for that, they claim that the advent of the 24-hour news channels and cable and options available on the web give consumers more choices. The Contra Costa Times recently editorialized, quote, "The reality of what took place Monday, June 2nd, concentration of the media in the hands of a very small number of companies already exists and has existed for years. And despite that, the flow of ideas, information, news, and entertainment is the most diverse it has ever been, certainly far more diverse than when the industry was heavily regulated." That's from the Contra Costa Times of June 8th. Why is this logic flawed in your view?
Well, there's an element of truth to it. I mean, the argument goes that, well, along with the Internet and multi-channel television, there's this plethora of voices. So the traditional concerns about only having three or four TV stations in the community, one monopoly newspaper, and a handful of radio stations no longer exist. And there is an element of truth. Obviously, we're bombarded with websites. We've got lots of channels. The problem with the argument and why it's fundamentally flawed is simply this. It doesn't to undermine the case for putting ownership limits on radio and TV licenses like we're talking about, to put ownership limits in media, for that case to really be genuine, to hold, to stick, one empirical fact alone would be looked at. And that is simply this. Traditionally, when the government has given these monopoly licenses to radio and television broadcasters, it's been understood that it's giving basically away for free to private concerns beachfront property in the media beach. Once you get those licenses, it's impossible not to make money because you've got so much monopoly market power in a community with a radio and TV station. If, in fact, the Contra Costa Times is correct and that that's no longer the case, that getting a radio or TV license no longer is beachfront property on the media beach, but instead it's just a grain of sand in the media beach because there's all these other now equivalent voices out there balancing off the radio and TV channels. The market would indicate this, and the market would indicate it very simply, as our free market friends like to tell us, the value of these stations would begin to stagnate and even fall. I mean, after all, who's going to spend hundreds of million dollars for a radio station in Los Angeles if instead of getting a beachfront house, you're getting a grain of sand on the beach? No one is. The price would begin to fall. In fact, some of these companies would probably try to give up their stations, unload them, dump them, since they're suddenly going to become so worthless. Instead, just the opposite takes place. These stations are more valuable than ever. The value of radio and TV licenses has gone up at double-digit rates for most of the last decade. They're shooting up in value. These companies are clamoring to buy more and more of these monopoly stations. They know how valuable they are. There's no one in the real world of capitalism who thinks these things no longer have monopoly power. They understand they're phenomenally valuable. And as long as the value is increasing like this, the government justification for regulation is fully in place. And just the fact that you or I might have a website does not counter that monopoly power, that market power. And the constitutional, legal, and moral justification for having ownership regulation is fully intact.
Earlier this year, in an interview with PBS producer Rick Carr, FCC Chair Michael Powell stated, quote, "The market lets people get killed. If you really are a believer in the market, like I do, you also let the market kill off companies that are not effective and can't adapt. They're not particularly happy about that aspect of the market, but I think it's a natural part of the system." Your thoughts on the chairman's comments?
Well, I think he's talking out of the back end of his anatomy, as he usually does. I mean, he says he's a big believer in the market, but then he's running the biggest crony capitalist setup system in the world. I mean, there's nothing free market about broadcasting. He's giving out monopoly licenses to companies, protecting their interests. And his primary concern seems to be to make these companies, the big existing companies, as rich as possible. When you hear him talk, you know, the last thing he wants to do is, you know, put these companies at risk of competition. The reason why he's defending relaxing these media ownership caps, he says they're not making enough money. They have to be allowed to get bigger and have less competition in the market so they can be more profitable, and then they'll be good for the American people. What's good, you know, he assumes ipso facto that if these companies are more profitable, that it automatically will be to the benefit of the American people. So this free market rhetoric he hurls out periodically in interviews has nothing to do with the actual record of what he's doing, which is anti-free market, which is pro-crony capitalist, which is all about just fattening the bank accounts of the biggest campaign contributors to his boss's political career.
How much more diverse do you think media was in, say, the 1960s, 1970s, as compared with today?
You know, I don't know, and I don't think that really melts to a hill of beans in this discussion, because the point isn't, you know, that we want to get back to a golden age. The point is to look at our situation today and say, can it be better? You know, if we have the logic of always invoking a golden age, you never would have gotten rid of slavery or women's liberation or emancipation would never have been considered. Say, hey, we haven't had it for 1,000 years. There was no golden age, so I guess we can't ever have it. You know, there were strengths and weaknesses of our media system in the past. Some things were better, some probably worse. And we can learn from study, and I'm a historian by nature, but we can't use history in the sense, well, we've got to come up with a perfect system in the past to justify changing a lousy system today.
What are your thoughts on, there has been some discussion about maybe getting rid of the FCC because they're not really doing their job. What do you think of that? Should we abolish the FCC, do away with it?
Well, it would depend what you replace it with. I mean, just abolishing it for the sake of abolishing it wouldn't necessarily be good. What we need to have is, rather than talk in those terms, which are really sort of vague and don't, unless there's more to it, don't really amount to much, what we really need to talk about is how do we have a viable system of generating media policies that are out in the open, that represent the public interest, and enforcing them. Now, you conceivably could have that with the FCC, but it would have to change radically to fulfill that. It's not just that the institution exists, it's how it operates and the manner it operates that's in question. We have to remove the corruption, we have to make it publicly accountable, and we have to really just change the entire culture there. Maybe that means abolishing it, but just abolishing it for the sake of abolishing it without something to replace it with or a plan doesn't really do much.
And this move in Congress tomorrow, what is the likelihood of it actually overturning the FCC decision of June 2nd?
Well, I don't think there's much doubt right now that at least one or two of the FCC rules will be voted down in the Senate Commerce Committee tomorrow, but that doesn't mean they will be overturned because they would still have to be approved by the Senate, the House, get signed off by the President. All of that's fairly unlikely, but there are a number of different steps at play in Congress right now. Those, not just the vote in the Commerce Committee. And I'd urge listeners once again to go to www.mediareform.net because we update what's going on in Congress at that website literally two or three times a day. We have two people working the Hill full time. You can stay right on top of where the action is. There's a tremendous amount of activity in this issue in Capitol Hill right now, a lot of organizing going on. And we need people to send letters and emails to their members of Congress. You can do it at that website, mediareform.net, and just let them know that this is important. We can actually win this one. I mean, this is not impossible. And at the very least, even if we don't overturn what the FCC has done, we can create such a public record highlighting the corruption and incompetence and the duplicity of Congress or the members of Congress who stand against this in the SEC that will make our organizing job in the months and years to come much easier to do. So it's extremely valuable for the mid and long term as well.
I just have a few more questions. There are those that argue that this decision by the FCC really just kind of highlights what is wrong in this country and how there are, you know, there's basically a corporate takeover of all facets of life, from media to the food we eat to the clothes we wear, et cetera. And then they also, there are those that argue that instead of the traditional means of protest, like what you're doing with this letter writing and fax and phone campaigns, that there are more direct actions like what we're doing, seizing open frequencies. What other things can you suggest for people to have their voices heard?
Well, I think you work on a whole lot of fronts in social change. I don't think there's one path. And the circumstance, and these are strategic and tactical questions that are determined by the specifics of a period. The goal, though, ultimately, is to have democracy and justice and social justice. I think that all these routes work in tandem. I don't think there's any one that you pick over the other. And once again, at a specific moment, strategically, some things make a lot more sense than others.
Mm-hmm. And then I guess finally, if you could just give us a critique of the indie media movement, what stories are the indie reporters missing out on? What could we do to improve our service to the public?
Well, I'm in no position to critique the indie media movement because I have to consume all the indie media to know what they're missing, and I haven't been able to consume all of it. I really like the indie media movement. You know, the core problem the indie media movement faces is that it doesn't have the resources to do the work it wants to do. It costs money. It takes institutional support to do good stuff. You know, if someone can't work in a coal mine 40 hours a week, raise three children, clean their house, make dinner, do their laundry, and then sit down and do great work at 11:15 at night, 2 minutes before they fall asleep. You need to have an income. You need to have institutional support, resources. And that's why it's a policy issue. I think the one weak spot or the one lesson I would send to the people interested in the indie media movement, don't concede the heart of the system to the corporations who stole these monopoly licenses. Don't let them get away with it. They have no right to it. Their power is illicit. Fight them. Don't accept your marginality as God's gift or as the will of the American people. It isn't. Don't be content to be marginal and to be speaking to a small group. Fight for the heart of the system, over policy, over politics. It's our system, not theirs.
That's the voice of Robert McChesney of the Institute for Communications Research at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, a well-published media critic. Again, just give us quickly the petition campaign that you're working on right now. How can people act on this?
Well, I helped start with my friend John Nichols and some other organizers and activists a group called Free Press, which is all about getting public participation in media debates and organizing for change in the media policies and media system in this country. And Free Press is actively organizing on this media ownership case at our website, which is called mediareform.net. And this is a website that has listings of every single media activist group in the country, every issue being worked on. It's not just about our group. It's trying to one-stop shopping for people who want to get their hands on the entire media activist movement in this country. And we do have at mediareform.net a petition drive to the Congress to have them overturn the FCC. And we also have daily updates on what's happening in Washington during the next 2, 3, 4 weeks as this issue is boiling on Capitol Hill. So please go to mediareform.net.
And any final thoughts today, Bob McChesney?
Well, if you're interested in media, I just want to tell you this is an issue that's just what's taken place in the last 6 months in the United States is unbelievable. I mean, 6 months ago, I was writing articles saying how we need to have an organized movement on media reform and media politics, and it was all hypothetical. There were some people working hard at it, but there wasn't anything close to a mass consciousness in this issue. You know, in the last 6 months, we've gotten 750,000 names to the FCC. I mean, the issue has raised in visibility exponentially. This issue is not going away. If you're interested in it, this is the time to get in it. Start organizing. It's a great issue to work on. It's one we can win on because we represent the interests of the vast majority of American people. And it's one where corporate corruption and sleaze just lie grotesquely exposed once they're looked at. So please get on board. We need you.
Bob McChesney, really thank you for joining me here on Rockin' the Boat.
My pleasure, Vinny.
And that was the voice of Robert McChesney, the author of 8 books, including Rich Media, Poor Democracy, and most recently with John Nichols, Our Media, not theirs. He is a founder of Free Press, a national nonprofit media reform organization working to democratize and ignite media policy debates on the World Wide Web at www.mediareform.net. Check out their website, sign the petition, get involved. Thanks for listening to Rockin' the Boat. Join me again tomorrow. I'll be discussing animal rights activist in Santa Cruz who is now being held by the FBI in a federal institute in Milpitas, California, for refusing to testify in front of a New Jersey grand jury investigating the activities of the animal rights group SHAC, Stop Huntington Animal Cruelty. Join me tomorrow from 5:30 to 6 for another edition of Rockin' the Boat here at 96.3 FM, Freak Radio Santa Cruz. Send me email to vman@freakradio.org to suggest guests and topics for future shows. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned. Again, if anybody hears you, you gotta wait.